Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. The main article I'm using for this program comes from factcheck.org. It's a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center. In light of the current political climate, I've done a bit of research on the various websites that claim to be non-biased. As far as I can tell, because this article refers to both Democratic and Republican spin on the budget topics, it's worthwhile to pay some attention to it. In addition, since it notes that the president's budget proposal is largely symbolic, it is not, as I'll read later, a piece of legislation on which Congress will vote. It is informative in general terms only. I'll begin with competing claims on Trump's budget and seniors by Lori Robertson. And because Social Security is one of the three budget areas that affect seniors most, from U.S. News and World Report, How to Protect Your Social Security Number. And beginning with competing claims on Trump's budget and seniors by Lori Robinson. In what has become an annual Washington exercise, Democrats and Republicans are waging a war of words over the president's proposed budget and how it would affect programs for seniors. President Donald Trump tweeted that he will not be touching your Social Security or Medicare in the budget, while Democrats have charged it does exactly that. The budget does propose reductions in future projected Medicare spending, but experts say that they are similar to last year's budget proposal, which included bipartisan ideas also supported by former President Barack Obama. The watchdog group Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget said that the Medicare proposals represent reductions in costs, not cuts in benefits. On Social Security, the budget calls for changes to disability benefits that would translate to cuts for some beneficiaries. On Medicaid, there are more significant but not well-defined cuts. We'll go through what the budget calls for in each of these programs. We'll also note that we're talking about a budget that won't actually be enacted. Any president's budget proposal is largely a symbolic statement of priorities, not a piece of legislation on which Congress would vote. And this budget is possibly a deader on arrival than most, Joseph Antos, a healthcare expert at the right-leaning American Enterprise Institute, or AEI, told us. Medicare battle lines. Of readers feeling a little deja vu? Well, it's because we wrote nearly a year ago about a similar Democratic spin on the 2020 budget proposal's potential impact on Medicare. This year, Trump goes too far in claiming we're not touching Medicare in the 2021 budget. There are several proposals to reduce the growth in spending over the next 10 years by about $600 billion, as the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget estimates. But Democrats again have spun those proposals as slashing and cuts that could ultimately hurt beneficiaries' access to needed care. Former Vice President Joe Biden said in February 10th interview, the day the White House released the budget, that the proposal eviscerates Medicare. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said that the next day in the press conference. So, if you're sitting at home in your kitchen table and your senior or someone in your house is a senior on Medicare, you're getting cut. And if there is a long-term care in your family's budget, you're getting cut. Well, a cut or savings, the word choice depends on one's political party. Of $600 billion over 10 years would be a 6% decrease from projected spending, CRFB said. And as we saw with the Affordable Care Act, when Democrats proposed cuts in the growth of future Medicare spending, they were criticized by Republicans for hurting the program and seniors. Now the rhetoric is reversed. Despite what you hear from the other side, Medicare will grow at 6% under this budget. Acting Office of Management and Budget Director Russ Vogt told reporters on February 10th. That's a 1% point slower growth on average than what is projected under current law, according to CRFB. The debate about reducing the rate of growth in spending versus spending cuts is somewhat semantic, and it has been trotted out by both parties in past years. Tricia Newman, Senior Vice President and Director of the Program on Medicare Policy at the nonpartisan Kaiser Family Foundation, or KFF, told us in an email. Some reduction to the growth of the program and/or an increase in funding is necessary. The Trust Fund for Hospital Insurance, Medicare Part A, is set to be insolvent in 2026, meaning the trust fund would be exhausted and payroll taxes wouldn't be enough to cover the projected spending. A big boost in the economy could potentially extend the life of the trust fund a bit, Newman said. But even with a tailwind, policymakers will need to reduce Medicare spending, increase revenues, or both, to keep the trust fund solvent for an extended period of time. That said, there are a number of policies that could be considered to extend the life of the trust fund beyond those proposed in the administration's budget. What does the administration propose? Several of the same policies it backed last year, including making one payment to post-acute care providers instead of different payments based on the site of care. That would be $105 billion in savings over 10 years. Equalizing site of service payments, meaning paying the same amount whether services are performed at hospital facilities or doctor's offices, savings of $175 billion. Changing graduate medical education payments to a federal grant program with spending caps, savings $50 billion. And cutting payments to providers for bad debt, meaning unpaid copays and deductibles from beneficiaries, saving $35 billion. Those figures come from CRFB and are similar to the amounts for such proposals in Trump's 2020 budget released last year. Trump's post-acute care payment change mirrors Obama's fiscal 2017 budget proposal for nearly $100 billion in savings over 10 years from a similar proposal. Obama also had proposals for reducing bad debts and equalizing payments. Several of the major budget proposals, such as site-neutral payments to equalize Medicare's payment to different kinds of facilities, are similar to recommendations from the Medicare Payment Advisory Committee to address recommendations. Overpayments to certain providers. Paul N. Vandewater, a senior fellow at the left-leaning Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, or CBPP, wrote in February 13th analysis. Trump's budget would mainly affect hospitals and post-acute providers, KFF's Newman told us, noting that she would describe the proposals as more nonpartisan than bipartisan, since they are still somewhat controversial and have yet to move through the legislative process. Democrats have argued that charging payments to health care providers could affect beneficiaries' access to care. Henry Connolly, a spokesman for Pelosi, told us that when we asked about the speaker's comments on the budget, that these Medicare cuts in the Trump budget mean seniors will find it harder to access quality care when they need it. Vandewater told us in a phone interview that it's possible access to care could be affected, but not likely, at least in the near term. He explained that the Medicare Payment Advisory Committee, MPAC, an independent agency that advises Congress, takes a thorough look every year at the adequacy of payments with an eye to making sure that they're not reduced to a point where they impair access on the part of beneficiaries. If it appeared access was going to be significantly restricted, that agency, known as MedPAC, would say so. CRFB said in a footnote to its analysis of the Medicare proposal that lower payments to providers could impact quality and access in some select cases. But it said there is little evidence of any significant effect, particularly for proposals that largely focus on reducing excessive payments and spending more efficiently. The providers who would be affected wouldn't be very happy with reduced payments, AEI's Antos noted in a phone interview. Indeed, the Federation of American Hospitals said the budget will make the job of America's caregivers much more difficult. In terms of an impact on beneficiaries' access, Antos said there's always that possibility, but given seniors are a big customer base for healthcare providers, there's really more risk on the side of providers to say, no, we're not going to take Medicare patients. Medicare beneficiaries would also benefit from some proposals, KFF's Newman said. It was conceivable that provider payment changes to hospitals would reduce Medicare spending growth, which could potentially slow the growth in Medicare deductibles. CRFB said the policies would actually reduce costs for individuals by lowering premiums and out-of-pocket costs. One notable difference between the 2020 and 21 budget proposals is the lack of detail in Trump's latest drug spending policies. The new budget includes $135 billion in comprehensive drug pricing reform without explaining what that might be. Antos at AEI told us that drug pricing is the most likely topic Congress would address from the budget proposals. So the administration is leaving some wiggle room. Both parties want to do something on drug pricing, but it's unclear what legislation might be feasible. Both want to claim victory for themselves, he said. Like last year's budget, this one proposes moving two programs in Medicare payments to hospitals for uncompensated care and for graduate medical education to other parts of the budget. That's not included in CRFB's calculation of $600 billion in Medicare spending reduction. Note, CBPP calculates $501 billion in Medicare reductions in the budget over 10 years. The difference between the two organizations' figures is that CRFB included $100 billion in likely savings from the budget's unspecified drug pricing reform. In his CBPP post on the budget's Medicare proposals, Vanderwater did take issue with other Trump administration proposals that he said would weaken Medicare's finances and harm beneficiaries, pointing to an October executive order to boost private Medicare Advantage plans. That could raise costs for some or all beneficiaries by increasing payment rates to providers, Vanderwater wrote. Two proposals in that executive order, removing limits on private contracts between patients and providers, and making it easier for seniors to opt out of Medicare, he wrote, are also in the budget, he said, but without any spending reduction figures. On to Social Security. The budget proposes reductions to the Social Security Disability Insurance, or SSDI, and Supplemental Security Income, SSI, programs, but not reductions to the retirement portion of Social Security. The savings from SSDI benefits for those unable to work due to a medical condition that lasts more than a year or causes death. An SSI for low-income disabled adults and children would come partly from reducing retroactive benefits beneficiaries can receive from 12 months to 6. That means a worker who becomes disabled would be eligible for half the amount of retroactive benefits once he or she applies, CPBB explains. Other proposals include reducing benefits if more than one family member gets SSI benefits, and testing methods to increase work participation among disability recipients. CRFB said these proposals would amount to $35 billion over 10 years in tangible policy savings and $45 billion in work promotion savings, which are unlikely to materialize at such a large scale. Newman at KFF said proposals to restrict SSDI eligibility would affect Medicare as well. She points to a provision in the budget to reduce improper payments caused by barriers for beneficiaries to report income assets. That provision calls for developing new reporting and review systems, as well as future-related legislative changes that could include requiring suspension of benefits when beneficiaries neglect wage and resource reporting requirements, and instituting mandatory training for beneficiaries on reporting requirements prior to receipt of their first benefit check. People may not think of that as a Medicare provision, but it is, in that SSDI is a pathway to Medicare, Newman told us. If fewer people qualify for Social Security disability insurance payments, then fewer people with disabilities may qualify for Medicare. Medicare beneficiaries include 52 6/10 million seniors and 8 6/10 million individuals with disabilities, according to the latest figures from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And now on to Medicaid. Politicians often include Medicaid when they criticize the Trump budget's proposal for Medicare, and the president's proposals have included more significant reductions to the health program for low-income individuals. This year, though, the budget is less specific on what exactly those will be. Trump, too, included Medicaid when telling governors on February 10th, "We're not touching Medicare. We want to keep Medicare. We're not touching Social Security. We're making our country stronger again. We're not decreasing Medicaid." Well, that's false. The budget includes significant Medicaid savings by requiring work and community engagement activities, reintroducing asset limits, and otherwise tightening eligibility requirements for able-bodied adults, resulting in about $130 billion of savings, CRFB said. Beyond that, the budget includes $844 billion in savings over 10 years for what it calls the president's health reform vision, with little information on what that would be. CRFB noted that in past years, the president's proposals has included changing Affordable Care Act spending to block grants to states and putting a cap on the growth of Medicaid spending. While this proposal is likely to differ, CRFB said, the bulk of the savings would most certainly come from Medicaid and ACA subsidies. CPBB estimated the reduction to Medicaid and ACA spending over a decade at $1 trillion. That figure was $777 billion for the 2020 budget. This year's budget does make a reference to ending the enhanced federal matching funds to states that expanded Medicaid eligibility under the ACA. Medicaid, which is jointly funded by the state and the federal government, primarily has covered the disabled, children, pregnant women, and families with low incomes. But the ACA enabled states to expand eligibility to all adults earning up to 138% of the federal poverty level. The federal government has paid nearly all of the costs of covering this expansion population. The federal match was 100% initially and has phased down to 90%. The traditional federal match rate varies but can be as low as 50%. The budget refers to this adult expansion population when it says that under the health reform vision, Medicaid spending will grow at a more sustainable rate by ending the financial bias that currently favors able-bodied working-age adults over the truly vulnerable. Ending the higher federal match to cover the expansion population would almost certainly lead states to end coverage for most of the more than 12 million people who have gained coverage through the expansion, CBPP's Aviva Arondine, vice president for health policy, wrote. We don't know exactly how states would respond. Politicians have linked the overall Medicaid cuts to seniors' health care, since the program pays for long-term care for those with low incomes and assets. There is one specific provision in the budget that would affect eligibility for such Medicaid coverage. It calls for taking away state authority to set higher home equity limits than the federal minimum when determining eligibility, Vanderwater told us. This would quite likely have a substantial effect on people getting long-term care coverage. Seniors, particularly in states with high home values, would either not qualify if their homes were worth more than the limit, or they would have to sell their homes. Newman, too, noted that the budget would achieve more than $30 billion in savings by limiting eligibility for Medicaid-covered nursing home care. As we said, a president's budget is more a statement of policies and priorities than a budget Congress would debate. In fact, Republican Senator Mike Enzi, chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, said in a floor speech on February 10th that he wouldn't hold a hearing on Trump's budget for the same reason he didn't hold one on Obama's final budget, because it turns into a diatribe against the president. Over the next few days, you will hear lots of complaints about the president's budget. Seldom will anybody mention anything good, and it has been that way for every president, Enzi said. Congress doesn't pay any attention to the president's budget exercise. That is all it is, an exercise, he continued. Congress holds the purse strings, according to the Constitution, and Congress is very protective of that constitutional authority. And now from New Issues and World Report, how to protect your Social Security number. When you create a Social Security account, you can check the accuracy of your earnings and correct errors. Here's how to prevent other people from accessing your Social Security online account by Emily Brandon. Millions of Social Security numbers have been compromised due to the data breach at the credit reporting firm Equifax. And once your number has been viewed by potential identity thieves, there's no way for your Social Security number to be secret again. However, there are things you can do to keep your Social Security number safe and limit the risk that a stolen Social Security number can be used against you. Here's how to keep your Social Security information secure. Create a Social Security account. Set up a two-factor authentication. Block electronic access to your Social Security account. Don't give out your number in unsolicited calls or emails. Shred documents with your number and know who really needs your number and who doesn't. Create a My Social Security account. Workers age 18 and older are eligible to create a My Social Security account and get a personalized estimate of future Social Security payments. Establishing a My Social Security account allows you to check the accuracy of your earnings and correct errors so that you will receive the maximum possible benefit you qualify for. The Social Security Administration points out that creating an account prevents someone else from using your Social Security number to set up an account in your name and gain access to your benefits and earnings information. The two-factor authentication. You can further protect your Social Security account by setting up two-factor authentication. This means that in addition to a username and password, you use a second method of identification, such as a code sent to your cell phone or email address. The Social Security Administration says using two methods of identification each time you log in better protects your account from unauthorized use and identity fraud. Once your information is in the hands of a business or organization or agency, there really is nothing you can do to protect it. You have to trust them to protect it, and sometimes they don't do a good job, said Susan Grant, Director of Consumer Protection and Privacy at the Consumer Federation of America. What you can control to some extent is the ease with which an imposter will be able to use it. Two or more forms of authentication make it more difficult for imposters to break into your account. Block electronic access to your Social Security account. If you don't want to use the Social Security online account, consider blocking it its access so that no one can set up an account using your compromised Social Security number. You can stop all electronic and automated telephone access to your information. If you later change your mind about interacting with the Social Security Administration remotely, you can unblock your account. And of course, don't give out your number in unsolicited calls or emails. Social Security number, but none of those organizations are likely to reach out requesting your number. They don't need to call you and ask you for your information because they already have it, Grant said. No one is legitimately going to be calling and asking for that. If that happens, tell them no and hang up. One widespread phone scam involves telling potential victims that their Social Security number has been suspended, which is impossible because Social Security numbers cannot be suspended. Well, shred documents with your number. If you receive financial statements or other documents containing your Social Security number, lock them away in a safe place or shred them carefully if you don't need them. Make sure you put your Social Security card in a safe, locked spot in your home where you know where it is and can grab it when you need it, said Amy Nofzinger, regional director of the AARP Foundation. Make sure you shred documents with any personal information on it, and we recommend a crosscut or confetti shredder. And know who really needs your number and who doesn't. There are organizations that require your Social Security number, including your employer, the RIS, and financial institutions. But there are many other organizations that might ask for your Social Security number but don't really need it, including hospitals, doctors, insurers, utilities, schools, and retail stores. Many forms, like those in doctors and dentist's office, have a space for your Social Security number, but it may not actually be needed if your insurance company provides its own identification number for your coverage, as most do, said Neil Stern, a certified public accountant and member of the AICPA's National CPA Financial Literacy Commission. Provide your Social Security number only when it's really needed, and don't be afraid to ask. Well, I'm sure there will be much more on the federal budget as it comes closer to Congress's time to act on it. I know I appreciated knowing that there's nothing written in stone at this point. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.